Okay, thanks, Ellen. Welcome, everybody. As you see on the screen here, we've got Justin Bray and Jim Milloway. They're going to be introducing themselves, particularly Justin. And there's a lot of unique things about what they've done. I think one of the things that's unique about Justin is that he was previously, you know, overseeing benefits and human resources at the Innovation Controls, which we're going to be talking about today. But the fact that he is the CEO of a company now, I think is testament to the great work that he did in his previous company that we're going to hear about. So why don't we start just by Justin, why don't you introduce yourself, a little bit of background information on Innovation Controls, kind of, you know, the industry that Innovation Controls is in, the sort of type of workforce, the number of people on the plan, that sort of thing, and then we'll get into some specific questions.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you for the kind words. My name is Justin Bray, and for over 12 years, I was the title was VP of Organizational Effectiveness, which combined HR, which we really refer to as our human capital, and continuous improvement. And so over that duration, this company was a company that served the oil and gas industry. We did a tremendous amount of business on pipelines, specifically at the wellhead. We also were a leader in the display market. But we had a workforce of about at our highest number, our plan was up to 600 in our plan. But what we were dealing with is we had a very diverse population in terms of blue collar, white collar, and the needs of those organizations were quite different. But, you know, I told Dave I'd like to take just 2 or 3 minutes to talk about my journey, because to be real honest with you, my first day at Innovation Controls, I worked for a very dynamic leader that was leveraging my experience in continuous improvement, specifically Six Sigma. And he was like, man, I want you to transform my HR group. And so when we started looking at this, you know, Six Sigma is a great thing, but it also looks for cost reduction in the end. And so I started looking at my HR budget, and the absolute biggest cost I had, besides people, right, was my healthcare plan. And I remember sitting here studying the numbers and thinking to myself, I don't have the foggiest idea of what I can do to influence this. And at the time, we were doing something slightly progressive where we had an on-site clinic. But the problem is, I had an on-site clinic of which only 33% participated in their annual health risk assessment. Because our hypothesis was that if we could get people healthier, then these large claims that drive all of our spending, we could influence. And so we were starting there, and even though we got started on this journey, we were doing all kinds of initiatives, but yet I wasn't seeing the impact to our plan yet. And the frustrating part is I would see data that would show me things like I was spending X amount of dollars for a hip replacement here, and 2x that here, and there was just no rhyme or reason. And so, to be honest, I was completely humbled by this problem, but I was equally intrigued, because what I wanted to do was figure out a way that I could hold our cost at bay in a world where medical health care is you know, accelerating the cost year over year. And so to give you a little bit of the punchline, and then I'll back into a little bit of the story. But when you look at since 2002, when you look at healthcare premiums, they've risen over 96%, whereas innovation only rose 29%. You know, the medical costs had exceeded over 90%, yet our costs had only exceeded 45%. And the fact is, the population that affected the most were our people, because, for example, from 2007 to 2014, we had zero premium increases for our employees. And so what happened is, I figured out early on that my knowledge in how to really influence this was limited. So I started seeking out the counsel of, quite frankly, people I thought were smarter than me to help me solve the problem in my industry or in my company. And so when you think about those results, you know, what I really wanted to focus on is what would really impact our employees. Because when I have a guy out there making $30,000 a year, and God forbid something happened to him, and they have to reach their out-of-pocket max of $2,500, well, as far as their disposable spending, that's 10% of their annual disposable income. And what was happening is, much to my disappointment, I was finding out employees, in order to have medical necessary procedures, were having to charge stuff on their credit cards and get hit with 17% interest and really creating a lot of emotional stress. And so what I really wanted to do was design a systematic approach at this that would really benefit the employees. And hey, if the company had benefits as well, great. But so there's two quick other things I'd like to share. So in our journey, I started seeking out the advice from people around me. And Jim is really one of the thought leaders, I would consider our relationship. And we really started talking about a lot of creative ideas of how we could unravel this and really help a company my size, a smaller company. And so one of the first things I remember the discussion we had was around transparency. He was like, "Justin, doesn't it just drive you crazy that, a person goes to their doctor and next thing you know, they're having a surgery and at one place it costs, $50,000, another place it costs $20,000. And I'll be honest, when this really hit me is after we partnered up on Zero Card, which, if you're not familiar with Zero Card, what it does is they've gone out directly to what I would say in many cases, some of the premier providers, and they've negotiated cash rates for net zero payment. And so what happens is, if our employees are willing to change location of where they do a surgery, then guess what it costs them as far as an out-of-pocket maximum? Nothing, zero. And so I felt pretty excited about the plan, but here's when it really hit me, is I was at one of my son's football games, and I had a lady walk up to me, and I knew her fairly well. She worked for a company, and she said, and it was around Christmas time, and this is really, it really moved me, because she said, "You know what? I need to thank you." And I said, "About what?" And she goes, "Well, last month when we were doing open enrollment and you talked about this Zero Card, I grabbed," and Jim, it might have been you she talked to, but she said, "I talked to them about my husband was about to have a spinal fusion surgery and that it was going to cost my family and it was going to cost the family $2,500. To have this surgery," and Jim, correct me on my numbers, but the quoted for that service was over $100,000. And Jim, huh?
I think you're on mute, Jim. Jim, I think you're on mute.
Yeah, now I'm off mute. So Justin, you're right. When we looked at this specific procedure leading up to this and looking at your claims data, we saw the exact same spinal fusion at the facility the member was going to go to had been reimbursed after the network discounted $129,000 in the past.
Now, so I'm going to tell you a little bit of the rest story. So she was able to do this through Zero Card. Her husband was willing to move to another location to have the surgery done. And Jim said, you know what? Let me try to talk to the CEO and see if they will do something. And Jim, won't you tell them a little bit about some of the back and forth and text messages and some of that, if you don't mind?
So I called the CEO of the hospital that he was originally scheduled at, the one that was performing this procedure for $130,000. And I said, you know, this is one of our customers. They're on Zero Card. We'd really like to do this deal with you. And he said, well, how much are you going to pay me in a flat case rate, in a bundled rate? And we said, this will be a good deal. We'll give you $30,000. The CEO laughed and almost hung up on me because he was on vacation with his family. I called Justin back and I said, I think I can get this guy, but how much of your money can I spend without calling you back? And Justin said, I don't know, go up to 50. So I called the CEO back and I said, you know what? They really want to get this deal done. And if we can't get it done here, they're thinking about cutting a check to the employee and paying him $5,000. And he said, oh, we don't want that to happen. I said, well, they've authorized me to go all the way up to $35,000 for this procedure. And the CEO said, we'll get it done for 38. I'm on vacation. Leave me alone.
So what happened is for this lady, and I didn't realize the impact, is she goes, we were considering canceling the procedure because we couldn't afford it. And then, you know, serendipitously, by having the introduction of this benefit to them, they were able to have the procedure done. And what she was telling me was, she goes, this was the first Christmas that my husband was actually able to enjoy because his pain, you know, because he had already had surgery before Christmas, his pain had gone away and it didn't break us financially. And by this time, she was starting to tear up. And, you know, I'm a softie and I was starting to tear up. So I just gave her a big hug and said, listen, you know, we care about our employees and we're going to do everything it takes to make, you know, to make sense of this journey. And so after that, and I am wrapping up here, but after that, we had a couple conversations with other employees. And what we discovered is, even though we had health savings account plans that would allow them to negotiate individually, what we found out is our employees, when we engage them in the dialogue, what they told us is they are completely intimidated by this whole process because it's unfamiliar to them. They don't know all the ins and outs, and they feel like they're being judged anytime they ask questions. And I promised them, I said, listen, I'm giving you an easy button. Because at the time, that's when I think it was Staples had that little easy button. I said, if you have questions, call Zero Card and let them help noodle through this. And so it became an unlocking move when we invited our employees to be part of the process and really help us be creative. Because at the end of the day, what I was surprised at is they were willing to move doctors, move hospitals, and do whatever it takes if it was keeping them out of, you know, financial chaos. And we've done, what, 91 plus claims before I left? And so that's 91 lives out of a population of 600 that were affected directly through the benefits of just one program, not to mention our efforts around, you know, we started looking at centers of excellence and we've got stories around that. But what I would tell you is, as intimidated as I was, once I realized how intimidated our employees were and how scary this maze is, because they're trying to figure all this out in the midst of an illness of a loved one. And so I became completely dedicated to trying to make this as easy for our employees as possible. Is that fair, Dave? I'd like to stop there and then let Jim kick in.
No, I think that was great. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's important for people to understand your perspective as a CEO. And I think it's one of the reasons why I've I think both by Dave and I have admired what you guys did at Innovation Controls, because this is a tough emotional journey for everybody from leadership to the actual end user.
Yeah, and one thing, Justin, I think would be good, pulling back a little bit, in an earlier conversation you had shared about when you looked at the 5500, which for the people on the phone who, or the call who may not know about it, this is the reporting, you know, that's required of self-insured plans. And Justin, you're muted right now.
Yeah, no, Dave, I'll gladly share that story, because as equally as intimidated as I was at looking at this situation, I also had to sign our annual 5500. And so as I was going down here to look at the filing that came in from our accountants, I noted a line item that said $50,000 to an insurance broker. And it had his name there, and I looked at it and I thought, I've been here a year and I've never heard of this person. They've never reached out to me. And I asked the question, what do they actually do for us? And I was amazed that nobody knew the answer. It's just that for the last 10 years, this guy was our official broker and he was getting $50,000 a year. And so one of the things, Dave, I tried to do is say, how can I need a broker. I'm smart enough to know I need somebody to help me, but I want somebody that's a partner with me. And so like with Jim, and Jim, I'm gonna say something, I'm not sure here, but Jim wasn't my broker at the time, but he knew the situation I was in, but he still helped me as a thought leader and a broker type. But what I did is I found a partner that would actually add value in kind of the strategy around what we were trying to do, from lowering costs for our employees and ultimately the company. And so I had people like Jim, I had, you know, other folks from CareATC, and those were my partners, I felt like, in this journey. Was that helpful, Dave?
Yeah, definitely. Great. And one of the things I remember Jim sharing with me that caused, you know, us to ultimately have breakfast when I was in Tulsa was hearing about, you know, Jim calls pricing failure the gap between the so-called PPO discount, not the bogus build charge, but the so-called PPO discount, and a fair market clearing price, which is what, you know, transparent open networks like the Zero Card enable. And he had talked about it, how you'd done really had an amazing track record of removing that pricing failure. And obviously they're part of that, but you know, you can have the best plan in the world. If it's not well communicated, it just doesn't matter. And so I think it'd be great to share a little bit about, you know, you gave kind of the micro example of a particular employee and Jim stepping in. But I imagine there was probably some other communications that happened with employees that, you know, very few people are, you know, literate and conversant in the nuances of healthcare billing. It's, you know, confusing by design. And so how did you overcome that obstacle? I mean, I assume, you know, you're not a stealth NASA outlet that's filled with rocket scientists.
Yeah.
And very few organizations are filled with rocket scientists. And frankly, most of them probably couldn't figure out health benefits anyway. So how did you overcome that hurdle?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me do two things. First of all, I had to invite our employees to understand their current state of health. And so part of that was our health risk assessments. And I mentioned earlier, I came into a situation where we offer those for free, and I had 33% of the people participating. And so just to give you a little bit about our plan, our deductible was $300 and $600. So what I did was I doubled it. I said, you know what, deductibles are going to be $600 and $1,200, which, oh, by the way, we're still below market in the scheme of things. And I said, however, if you simply take the health risk assessment, and we had to educate them on the fact the company wouldn't see the results, all those kind of fears they had that Big Brother was watching them. But the moment I invited them to be more aware and in tune of their health, and then gave them a motivation to do it so they could keep a $300 and $600 deductible. But guess what? In their mind, they were getting a deal. The other commitment I did with them, Dave, is I said, guys, the company's not trying to make money here. I want you to be partners with us in controlling costs, because if you control costs, we're both going to share in it. The way you'll share is we're going to hold your premium steady. And, oh, by the way, we're going to try to introduce ideas to help save you money, you know, because for an employee, that $2,500 or $5,000 family deductible, however you want to look at it, the fact of the matter is that is a big number for them. And so once I started trying to put it in their terms of how it could impact them and how they would have lower premiums, they would have a plan that I felt was rich, and it allowed them to understand what we were cost sharing. You know, we targeted a range of the company was responsible for 75 to 80% of the cost. They were responsible for 20 to 25%. And in the last 5 years, we ran closer to 80-20. But that what that allowed us to do is as they helped us, then we were able to freeze things and help them. And so to summarize this, what we tried to do is educate them about their health, try to put support structures in place through the clinic. Because what I love about our clinic, Dave, is if you have a health risk assessment that wasn't good, you know, we looked at the metabolic factors, all these things. Fridays in our clinic was dedicated to follow up on health risk assessments. So we had committed to a doctor, but on that Friday, the doctor would literally email you, call you and say, hey, get in here. We got to talk about this. And so what we tried to do is let them understand more, create a space where they could actually get some help. And then what we did was also expand that to look at inviting them to be part of the saving, so to speak, and part of the solution, this process. Because I'll tell you, when you have an employee come to you and tell you that the health risk assessment saved their life, I mean, we've got an article on our wall from the Daily Oklahoman where a lady literally did the health risk assessment and found out she had to have surgery immediately on her heart, and she was starting the first stages of kidney failure. And so the fact is, knowledge, and this is what I love about what you're doing, knowledge is power. So the more we can make this transparent to everyone, I firmly believe that, yeah, we don't have NASA scientists, but we do have presidents of PTA and people that own businesses on the side. And so I believe if we give them the right information in a manner that they can take it in, then guess what? We've just made it a lot easier for them to engage in this process. And so when you talk about the Rosetta and the nature of that, it's all about understanding and raising knowledge, right? So yeah, that's our plan.
And so would you or Jim get to the level of, you know, because some of these concepts in healthcare can be pretty, you know, confusing or abstract to the regular Joe, you know, in terms of co-pays and co-insurance and deductible and, you know, HSA. I mean, your eyes can glaze over fairly quickly. Did you do anything like walking through, you know, Bob needs a, you know, ACL procedure. Here's what, you know, the build charges are, here's what the PPO discount would be, you know, and here's what we pay, you pay, kind of like at that detail level. Was, did you find
Jim that? Jim did a great job in education, and the app really made it easy as well. But Jim, talk to him about what we did to put it at their level.
Yeah, I think, so to your point, Dave, yeah, we gave those examples, but I want to give Justin and his team credit for doing something that I hadn't originally anticipated as a solution, and it proved to be a big changing event. A lot of times, beyond the complexity of these messages, right, both the brokers and the employers feel the need to cram these into where they feel most appropriate, right, which often happens to be open enrollment, right? So there's all these things going on, and my sense has long been that in open enrollment, I'm trying to figure out how much my premium's going up, how much worse my benefits are going to be, and if my wife's losing her GYN and my kid's losing their pediatrician, right? Once those questions are answered, I'm pretty much tuned out. And so beyond just the education thing, I think what Justin and his team did that was so powerful was we took this message and we essentially trained the trainer. And we taught the people running the safety programs how to talk about health plans and how to talk about health benefits. So suddenly, in an environment where people were paying attention because they built a culture of safety, you know, from lean and process improvement and looking at a Toyota production model, we started at the monthly safety meetings, which was touching the vast majority of the workforce. The safety leaders were then talking about, oh, by the way, don't forget about this. Here's one aspect of our health plan we're going to take 5 minutes to explain. And I'd never seen it broken out from just the normal, here's your benefits booklet, come to the health fair, hear the talk, watch the webinar. So I think it was impactful because it was coming from internal folks, and it was happening on a fairly frequent basis.
That's great. And how about the, you mentioned, I think CareATC was the on-site clinic provider. How have they been woven into like the zero card type of thing? And are they helpful in terms of also educating employees as to, you know, why you might want to, you know, might even be the same doctor, but go to a different facility? Are they in that process at all?
You want me to hit this one, Jim?
Yeah, sure.
So we had a couple cases where they weren't. And it actually happened on my CFO, who had to have neck surgery, and they were referring him to a doc that wasn't in what I would consider a zero card target. And now, luckily, Jim and them fixed it because they went to that hospital and negotiated a deal, and it worked out. But what we figured out is, wait a second, we're missing an opportunity to share data from our on-site doctor in the bigger pool of data, and making sure that the three-legged stool was all tied out. And so at first, I'm embarrassed to admit, we didn't quite have them connected in as well. Now, they were part of the strategy from health risk assessments, follow-up, but when it came to really directing them beyond that, we weren't all tied out. But when we had this issue with our CFO occur, then it quickly said, hey, we've got to not only educate our people, but we've also got to educate all of our partners about the holistic strategy and what we're all trying to do. And so once we did that, I think it really worked out a lot better. Jim, any comments from your point?
No, I agree. I think CareATC became a great partner beyond what they were hired to do, right? Which you don't always expect everyone. They were performing well at the clinic level or more than well, I think, but as Justin layered new solutions, right, more and more was asked of the clinic. And so it was an interesting process. But if you look at just referrals where we knew cost was going to play a part, so advanced imaging studies, you know, outpatient surgeries, it evolved to the point where before CareATC was referring anyone out, if they felt like it was something that could go under a bundled arrangement, that was actually bouncing off that vendor and zero card before it was going out into essentially the healthcare marketplace. So they evolved really rapidly, and to Justin's point, it just all started to work together.
Well, thank you for saying that, Jim. That was the unlocking move as well.
Well, and I think your situation actually isn't very unique in that even the primary care that's meant to be the quarterback, you know, of the healthcare team. I mean, the way the whole, you know, most plans, the healthcare system as a whole operates in this very siloed manner. But when I see organizations like yours really start to hit it out of the park, it's when that primary care is woven into it, because at the end of the day, people trust their doctor more than they trust a health insurance company or even their employer, you know, particularly if they're not financially conflicted, which unfortunately a lot of health system owned primary care docs are. And so that's something that's great to hear that they responded. And, you know, I would hope that they've extended that to some of their other clients, because that's really where things make a big difference. So another thing that I think I heard about was in terms of one of my takeaways here is, you know, you're talking about operational effectiveness and high performance teams and safety and really core business stuff, not, you know, healthcare benefits or some side thing. And you mentioned, you know, you kept the cost flat for your employees, which is a big win. Was there any impact in terms of, I think I heard something about what it enabled, innovation controls in terms of investing in R&D relative to their competitors? I mean, I don't want to get into confidential stuff, but if there's anything you can talk about, like, did that actually, while it was great for the employees, and of course that's good for the organization, was there any sort of financial impact on the company as well?
Absolutely, because so we had a strong leadership team, and basically when we started to launch into some of these new markets like displays, you know, we had a huge R&D investment. And so in order to meet our goals and expectations, a lot of the discussions we had by non-engineering groups is, what can we all do to help invest in this effort? And these were specific questions asked. And so when they came to my area, they'd say, Justin, what can we do? And so we would look at our plan. We would look at, you know, what the, you know, like what a broker was telling us we needed to budget for next year. And we would commit to saying, you know what, we're actually going to figure out how to save $100,000. And that's one engineer, right? And so that's how we started talking about things in terms of helping each other. So like you said, we used to have a $500,000 accrual that had the money sitting there that couldn't be used for all of our workplace, you know, basically workers' comp claims. Well, as we attacked that as part of this holistic solution, we brought that down to $75,000 a year. Now, what was driving us to do that was the business needed to redeploy resources to investing in the future of the company. Because let's face it, $500,000 of workers' comp costs, who is that helping? That just means that our employees aren't safe. We've got, those are wasted dollars, right? Those pay a lot of attorneys and a lot of doctors, but not the bills. And so what we tried to do was elevate HR as a strategic partner in being able to help support the company on some of their bigger initiatives. And so I think a lot of times we're seen as a cost to organizations. And what we try to do is flip that coin and say, how can we be, how can we attract the best talent? And so to your point, I hate to go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but let's face it, people can't perform at optimum levels if they're worried about the basics, you know, safety, security. And so we really started flipping our paradigm to say, hey, we're a business partner and we can help drive strategic aspects of the business as well. And so that was one of the changes in our paradigms.
Yeah, it's interesting you use the Maslow's hierarchy analogy there or metaphor, because that's something that I've actually mentioned quite a few times. As I observe different organizations and what healthcare has done to people, and really at the broad society level, I mean, this is a lot of what I address, you know, in my books, is our healthcare system, I mean, just to be very candid, has crushed people down to the lowest levels of Maslow's hierarchy.
Right.
People are in survival mode because they can't afford premiums and they can't afford to go to the doctor and all that. And what you see as you go to organizations like Innovation Controls that have actually said, you know, they're going to live that cliche that, you know, employees are our most important asset. I mean, every CEO says that, right? Well, if you've got your most important asset. You've shoved them down Maslow's hierarchy. And you're, furthermore, you're putting them into a healthcare system that if you don't get them to the high quality places, you know, it's 47 times safer to jump out of a plane than it is to be admitted to a hospital in terms of preventable medical mistake driven deaths. So it matters where you send people. And the great thing is, and Jim, you know, really is immersed in this, you find that the organizations at the highest quality and the best value, they do it so much that they are very efficient at it. Just like anything, I mean, you could hire me to be your plumber, but it's going to take me a long time and I'm not going to do a very good job. Right. Or you could hire somebody who does it all the time. And so that makes a big difference in terms of not only saving the money, but keeping people out of harm's way. And that's right. The reality is every day in this country, there are 10,000 cases of serious medical harm that were preventable. So it really matters where you send people, you know, in addition to the dollars and cents. So
Dave, we haven't even talked about that, but that's an important part of this strategy because our former VP of finance had to have heart surgery. Okay. He could go to a local hospital, but the problem is they had only done this procedure 100 times. But guess what we ended up doing? We said, you know what? We think we're better off sending him to Cleveland Clinic, paying the airfare, paying for his wife to go. Because you know what Cleveland did? They brought him in on a Monday. They had him on a plane home on a Thursday. And you know how many times he had to go back for one basic follow-up? Because they've done this procedure thousands of times. And so the fact of the matter is, you're right. We owe it to ourselves to make sure we're also educating our people about, hey, don't get caught into this trap of you have to go to your local hospital in Claremore, Oklahoma, population 35,000, because we're willing to invest in proper care because we know the cost that happens when there's a mistake is 5x. I'm going to throw a number out there, but we know the downtime, the severity of the issue actually magnifies. And so we really wanted to invite our people to consider centers of excellence. We were fortunate because like the Heart Center of Oklahoma, right, Jim?
Yes, Oklahoma Heart in Oklahoma City.
Right. They actually regionally was ranked, what, number one?
Correct.
So what we did was, you know, I feel like part of Zero Card strategy was to go get the best providers and say to them, hey, guys, would you like net zero bundled payments? And guess what the doctors were saying? Absolutely, because they're frustrated by the system as well. And so what I'm really proud of is our partners started leveraging some of the issues we were having and coming up with elegant solutions that were win-wins for the doctors, win-wins for the employees, win for the company, and everybody had something to gain out of this.
Yeah, no, and I think that message, I think it's easy to forget about what that message sends to, you know, some guy maybe is making $40,000, $50,000 a year, and his company is going to put him on a plane if need be to the Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic or whatever it might be. That's a heck of a strong message, you know, to those people. And so, you know, kudos to you for doing that. You know, inevitably, any change, you're going to have naysayers, you're going to have obstacles, these type of things. Were there any particular notable ones that jump out at you and that, you know, how you dealt with them, how you overcame them? Because whether it's internal skeptics or just bumps in the road, you know, any change is going to have some issues.
Well, one of the most humbling things that happened to me in this progression was with my management team, because they felt like I was constantly talking in HR speak. And so I was throwing out, you know, PPOs, HSAs, all this thing, and I was actually frustrating my peers. So when it really clicked with them, Dave, is when I put it into this terms. I said, guys, we're looking to buy a brand new CNC machine, right? Yes. And when we go out and we buy this CNC machine, that's going to cost us $2 million. You guys are going through to be very deliberate about the exact specifications, the preventive maintenance, the training, the education, all this. You have a plan for every aspect to get that machine to operate at the highest utilization, right? Yes. I said, okay. Now imagine this. We spend $18 million in people. Show me where their preventive maintenance plans are. Show me where their development and broadening their knowledge, where's those plans at? And I said, so how is we as a company can focus so much on $2 million spend and ignore an annual spend of $18 million? And all of a sudden, light bulbs start going off of saying, oh, crap, we may be looking at this wrong. And again, I know it sounds cliche-ish, but a happy employee is a productive employee. A healthy employee is a productive employee. I mean, Dave, we had to go attack things like financial literacy. Because here's what we were starting to notice. In our prescription spend, antidepressants was the number one drug prescribed in our plan. So imagine if I've got an employee that's overstressed, working their butt off, getting further and further in debt, then if I really want them healthy, what is my real root cause? Is it to give them more meds? Is it to check them into a clinic? Or is it to help them to understand how they can get out of their financial stress, right? So what we really tried to do is anytime we were faced with an issue, we tried to avoid the common approach. We tried to say, why? And really get to what we thought were some root causes. And so my biggest obstacle was educating my peer group and quit using the HR speak or the medical speak and start talking in their language of dollars and cents and return on investment. And so I dedicated myself to always present this in their language. And I'll be honest, Jim knows the success of this. I had the opportunity to go speak to 50 CEOs in the heavy-duty truck industry. And I purposely put that example in there and talking about how it really impacts the bottom line. And we were inundated with requests to follow up. I mean, Jim, won't you take the ball and run with this one? Because you had a huge opportunity come out of this when we started talking in the language of business, not HR or medical.
Yeah, we suddenly, for the first time in my life, sat in a room of 50 CEOs, and out of nowhere, 45 of them were suddenly interested in their healthcare spend and wanted to know how bad they were being taken advantage of. And this was historically large employers, right? Bigger than Innovation, most of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Right? 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 employees on these plans. And this had largely gone unnoticed. These guys were not interested in it. They weren't paying attention. And all of a sudden, they started looking around the room, realizing that they might have been, that they were more than likely been taken for the same ride that most everyone else had been to.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to segue to questions here in just a moment. But one thing you hit on, Justin, that really stands out, I want to put a point on it, is asking why. You know, one of the things, I think it was Toyota that came up with this, you ask why five times, you can get to the root cause of just about any problem. And
yes,
that's actually how I ended up on this journey where, you know, I was a health technology guy, I wasn't a benefits guy, but I just started asking why a lot about the many dysfunctions inside the healthcare system. And every time I did that, it came back to the way that we purchase healthcare in this country is just unbelievably flawed. And then I'll give people, you know, the other thing you hit on, you're talking about drug spend and drugs and whatnot, is there's a lot of literacy around that where people think that if somebody is allowed to prescribe a drug, that automatically means there's evidence behind it working and being effective. FDA only really approves for safety. And so the example that I tend to give the most is because of opioids, you know, is opioids are in the public consciousness, and just about everybody I've talked to has been personally impacted. Well, guess what the number one driver of opioid prescriptions is? Lower back pain. It's also the number one driver of disability. You know how much evidence there is that opioids are effective for lower back pain? And, you know, it's like if you were driving down the road and your car started making some horrible noise, you could turn up the radio and, you know, kind of drown it out. That's all opioids will do in that case is they'll mask the pain temporarily. But that, just like that car, if you're not addressing the underlying issue, you're actually during that time, it's not only not getting better, but you're becoming dependent or addicted to a medication. And you talked about antidepressants. You know, benzos is the category of drugs like Valium and Xanax are under. And one of my points I make is the opioid crisis is an anomaly. It is our healthcare system. Well, guess what? Benzos are basically where opioids were 10 years ago in the level of addiction and death. And about 30% of the opioid overdose deaths are actually both. And so it's one of those things where, you know, I'm not afraid to be provocative with business leaders and say, you know, there's the old expression, every addict needs an enabler. Guess what? Your health plan is the enabler. You're the enabler. You're paying for this. How do you feel about that? You know, of course, they don't feel good about it. And that's when some of the light bulbs go on. So I know we have about 10 minutes left. I want to make sure there's a chance for some questions here. So I think Melissa, you might be have a few questions, and if not, I have more. So
great. Well, we did have one question come in about what size of employer these types of plans are available to. The specific question was for a group of 140, but I know that on previous webinars, we've been asked about even smaller groups. So Jim and Dave, if you can talk about the size of groups that you've seen, the specific approach work for, as well as the broader Health Rosetta approach.
Well, I would say broadly, everybody can do something about their plan. You have different tools depending on your size and your geography and whatnot. You know, we see organizations down 20 employees who are self-insured and can do some things. Obviously, you got to have the proper kind of reinsurance or what's called stop loss. But there's no reason why an organization over 100 can't do the things we're doing. Sometimes you have to be more creative. I mean, there's a case study. We had a link at the beginning, and we'll put it back probably at the end, where you can go download either one of these books. And we've got some case studies, not only about innovation control, so you can get a little more detail there, but there's you know, another one of the case studies is a company called Langdale Industries. They're in a rural Georgia community and one hospital town. You would think that they would have their hands tied, but they show how you can even work in those challenging situations. So, Jim, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, no, I think the kicker is not to, it's really easy to get focused on the size, right? And this myth of I'm not big enough to do it, right? And the brokers and the health systems and the status quo players will certainly want you to believe that. The smallest employer that we've seen mimic what Justin does is an employer with only 72 employees on the health plan. And they've done everything. They're doing everything from bundled case rates to direct primary care, also through Care ATC. And they've had astounding success for the 4 or 5 years they've been doing it. And essentially, they took everything that Justin did and, you know, good artists copy and great artists steal. And we helped them steal every single one of Justin's ideas. And Justin, you'll know these guys well, but this is Sanjay Meshri and the group out of Advanced Chemical. 72 employees. Executing the exact same strategies.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I've seen it in rural settings, urban settings, private companies, public employers. large, small, every corner of the country. At the end of the day, the common thread is they said enough to the system, and they didn't submit to the tyranny of low expectations that you can't tackle these problems. You absolutely have to be working with the right people. I mean, that's why, you know, our nonprofit, the tip of the spear for this movement, is certifying people like Jim and other benefits consultants around the country. That's the first, you know, people ask you, hey, what's the first thing I should do? I said, well, you got to hire the right people. You just can't get from here to there. If somebody says it's too risky to do this or that, they're probably right, because if you work with them, it would be too risky because they don't know what they're doing. But there's thousands of examples around the country now. So you're not a pioneer. You may be a pioneer in your block or your zip code, but there's a lot we could draw from. And that was, again, kind of the backdrop of why we started this organization. It was just frustrating to me as some guy who's just some tech industry guy. You know, I remember I wrote the seminal paper on direct primary care because I just got, I learned about it and recognized, oh, this is a microcosm of a larger shift that needs to happen. And I was going, talking to health plan execs, health system execs, and there's actually a clause in the Affordable Care Act about direct primary care. And I'm just some tech geek. And I'm like, hey, what do you think about direct primary care? And they hadn't even heard of it. I was like, what are you doing? Like, this is your job. And so you got to be working with the right people. And hats off to Justin for, you know, picking the right people to work with, because then they have the collective intelligence that they can draw on. And that, you know, in a lot of ways, folks like Jim who've been doing it a while are kind of a blueprint or template for how this, we sort of suck, you know, the common themes out of Jim's brain. But even the thing you find is that these benefits, great benefits advisors, the best ones are actually the most humble, because they always know there's something else to be learned.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, the mindset that, you know, Justin, his previous role, you know, needs to have is like a corporate IT security guy. Like, what kept your network secure 2 years ago? Isn't it keeping it secure today? And it won't keep it, you know, what you're doing today that's working won't keep it secure 2 years from now. You better have a countermeasure for everything that the healthcare system is going to throw at you, because they're very effective at extracting money out of employers. They're essentially, employers are responsible for 3/4 of the industry profits, even though it's only about half of American lives. So very solvable, but you got to work with the right people. Thanks. Melissa, there any other questions?
So Jim, can you talk about ZeroCard's current geographic spread, network of providers?
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. And I saw this on the chat from, I think, Chris Maines. So right now, ZeroCard is focused on markets based on a couple of metrics, the biggest or optics, the biggest one being employer demand. So right now, Oklahoma, Illinois, Colorado, Texas, and Washington state. To answer your question directly, Chris, it depends, right? So for smaller employers, right, so think 100, 200, 500 lives, they're largely dependent on that current geographic structure. On the higher end of the spectrum, we're working with a retail organization right now with about 25,000 lives. And we've got enough scale in there that we're actually going market by market to build them out, right? So instead of looking for a solution that fixed all their geographies at once, large employers are able to scale this out over a period of, say, 12, 18, 24 months. So the smaller employers would be focused on that Missouri, Kansas, and Kansas City in that market, Oklahoma, Illinois, Colorado, Washington, and Texas.
Yeah. And one of the things I'd give a tip of the hat to Jim and folks like him in the organization is that they are very much problem solvers. And so if they can't solve something today or in the near future, there's a group of them around the country and there's a collaboration like, hey, you know, go work with these folks. And, you know, they're doing the same sort of thing. And I think that will get more and more mature in terms of how that works. But bottom line is I haven't seen it not work, you know, really anywhere once there's a focus on it. Oh, Justin, you're muted again.
You said, Dave, you said something a while ago that I think is also profound in this process, because if you really challenge yourself to ask those five whys, I will be honest with you, I was disappointed in some of the answers, because sometimes it came back to, well, that's the way we've always done it. And that's never a good answer when you're trying to combat an industry that's you know, changing so rapidly. So I would tell you, any of the people on the call, you know, just start asking those questions about your plan. And I think there's going to be times that you're like, wow, this is not a good answer. Is that okay?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, all of us kind of have to look in the mirror, you know, and, you know, I sometimes will describe how I'm a repentant revenue cycle consultant, which is just a fancy name for, you know, consulting to hospitals on how you can get as big a bill out as fast as possible and get it paid as quickly as possible. And there's an entire industry of these folks. Once I understood what this meant for individuals and the devastation it was having on our kids and our education and our ability to pay more employees. I mean, the interesting dynamic is we have 20 years of economic depression for the working and middle class. One definition of a economic depression is two or more years of income decline or stagnation. By that definition, the working and middle class is in an economic depression twice as long as the Great Depression. And it's not because employers aren't spending more money on employees. They're spending far more than they did 20 years ago. Problem is, it's all gone to healthcare. And so that's what you see now. The tide is turning, where the just and brave of the world are saying, okay, you know, we do, you know, believe in our employees. We want to invest in them. We'd like to have that money, you know, stay in their pocket versus going off into some ether. So that would be one of the things. So I think I see a question about the employer in Arizona. One thing you can do if you go to healthrosetta.org is there's a link, we could probably put it in the chat if we can pull it up in time, where if you go on the About Us, I think who we are, certified benefits consultants, there's actually a map that at the top of the list of those certified benefits consultants where you can see people all over the country. And so we have all 50 states covered now. There's about 110 folks, you know, it will continue to grow, but there's people in your neck of the woods who understand these things and can help you. And so that's a good starting point, or just contact us on our website and we'll help direct you to the right folks. Yep. And it's up on the chat box now, I see. Melissa, are there any other questions? I know we're down to the last minute, so I'll kind of let you put a book.
It looks like we've worked through them all.
Okay, great.
And I wanted to, before we go, I think the great irony of all of this is Justin, in his new role at CEO Specific Systems, has to start all this over and do it all over again with a much smaller population this time around, but it's going to be fun to watch him do it.
Good. Yeah, that'll be great. Melissa, why don't you take it away and, you know, I guess put any final words on the webinar.
Absolutely. So thank you, everybody, for joining. You should have seen a poll letting us know how we'll do it, how we were doing. And we are going to be running these monthly with different employers who have used different strategies for really tackling their healthcare costs. To Jim's point, one of the first steps that I know Justin mentioned he was doing in our pre-call is to move to being self-insured so that you have access to your data. That is a number one first step, is just to be able to have access to your data so you can see for your population where those costs are being driven from. So we hope you enjoyed it. Please do take the poll and look forward to talking to you again next month with a new employer. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.